The Vendetta passed through a broken belt of asteroids scattered along Anoth's orbit. The planet itself had shattered into three components. Two large chunks in contact, scraping and creating static discharges so that titanic lightning bolts blasted between them. Farther out circled a smaller, misshapen rock that held a breathable atmosphere in its lowlands. In a century or two, the three chunks would pulverize each other to space dust. But at the moment, Anoth was a hidden and protected haven. Until now. Looks like a rather rugged place to raise an infant, Colonel Ardak said.
It'll toughen him up, Fergan said. An appropriate beginning to the rigorous training he will undergo if he is to be our new emperor.
Ambassador Fergan, Ardak asked, raising his eyebrows. Do you have any indication of exactly where we should look for this alleged stronghold? Fergan thrust out his purplish lower lip. The spy Terpfen had provided the planet's coordinates, nothing more.
You can't expect me to do your entire job for you, Colonel, he snapped. Use the Dreadnought scanners.
Yes, sir. The Colonel gestured toward the technicians at the analysis and sensor panels.
We'll find it, sir, a wide-eyed corporal said, staring at a screen that showed a simplified computer diagram of the Anoth system's three components. There's not much down there, so it shouldn't be hard to pick them out.
Fergan stumped to the turbo lift at the rear of the control deck.
Colonel, I'm going down to inspect the Mad Hat vehicles. I trust you can handle everything here without me?
Yes, sir, Ardak said, a bit too emphatically. As the turbo lift swallowed him, Fergan thought he heard a muttered comment from the Dreadnought captain, but the words were cut off by the closing metal doors. Down in the Vendetta's hangar bay and staging area, Fergan stepped into a flurry of stormtrooper activity. White armored troopers jogged in tight formation across the metal-plated floor, carrying weapons, stashing siege gear and power packs inside the cargo holds of the Mad-Ats. On Corita, Fergan had followed the design and development of the new mountain terrain assault transports, and he relished the opportunity to see them used in actual combat. He would follow in the rear of the assault, letting fully trained troopers face the initial hazards, though there was little to worry about. A woman and a child hiding on a rock? How much resistance could they offer? Fergan ran his stubby fingers across the polished knee joint of one of the Mad-Hat walkers. Designed for ground assaults on remote mountain citadels, the Mad-Hat's articulated joints and sophisticated claw foot pads could scale even vertical surfaces of rock. On each joint were mounted supercharged lasers that could penetrate a half-meter-thick blast door. Two small blaster cannons hung on either side of the low-slung pilot's compartment to shoot down harrying fighter ships out of the sky. Fergan stared at the beautiful construction, smooth lines and glossy armor, marveling at the Mad Hat's incredible capabilities.
Splendid machine, he said.
The stormtroopers paid no attention to him as they finished their preparations. Colonel Ardax's voice came over the intercom. Your attention, please. After some difficulty with electrical discharges and ionization interference in this system, we have pinpointed the secret base. Prepare to deploy the strike force immediately. Let's make this a clean and quick kill. That is all. Ardak signed off.
You heard the colonel, Fergan said, as the stormtrooper teams began to clamber aboard their Mad-Hat vehicles. They would be dropped from orbit on a thunderous plunge through the atmosphere, encased in a thermal-resistant cocoon that would detach upon striking the surface. One trooper scrambled alone into his cockpit, hauling extra weapons, interrogation devices, and intelligence-gathering equipment.
You, Fergan said, stow all that in the cargo compartment. I am riding with you.
The stormtrooper looked at him in silence for a moment, his polished eye visor staring blankly.
Do you have a problem with that order, Sergeant? Fergan asked.
No, sir.
The voice crackled through the helmet speaker. The stormtrooper methodically removed the equipment and stowed it in the under compartment. Fergan heaved himself into the second seat and strapped in. He pulled two sets of the crash webbing around his body to make sure he landed without injury. He didn't want to limp in triumph into the defeated rebel stronghold. He waited impatiently as the rest of the stormtroopers completed preparations, slipped aboard their assault transports, and locked themselves down. When the launching bay dropped out from beneath his feet like a trap door,
Fergan grabbed the arms of his chair and cried out. The transports plunged like heavy projectiles into the waiting atmosphere. Even in its thick cocoon, the Mad Hat jounced and rocked as if it were being struck by cannon blasts. He tried unsuccessfully to stop his yell of panic. Beside him, the stormtrooper pilot said nothing. Inside the stronghold on Anoth, Leia's personal servant Winter glanced at the chronometer and at the giggling dark-haired baby. It was time to put young Anakin to bed. Though the triple planet Anoth had its own unusual cycle of days, nights, and twilights, Winter insisted on keeping their chronometers set to Coruscant standard time. Outside, the thin skies rarely brightened to more than a dark purple with flashes of searing yellow as electrical discharges blasted across space. The planetoid was a stormy world, its surface covered with stone pinnacles like mammoth cathedrals reaching up to the limits of Anoth's low gravity. Riddled with caves from thousands of geological inclusions that had weathered and volatilized away during centuries of planetary stresses, the rock spires provided a sheltered hiding place. Winter picked up the baby in her arms and bounced him against her hip as she went deeper into the facility. Anakin's shielded bedroom was brightly lit and decorated with soothing pastel colors. Tinkling music filled the air, a cheerful melody mixed with quiet wind and rushing water. A boxy rectangular G&K power droid waddled from station to station in the room, charging the batteries of Anakin's self-aware toys. "Thank you," Winter said out of habit, though the droid had only minimal interactive programming. The power droid burbled a response and shuffled out in a slow walk on accordion legs.
"Good evening, Master Anakin," said the caregiver droid in Anakin's chambers. An enhanced protocol model, the TDL droid was programmed to perform a majority of the functions required to care for a young child. TDL models had been marketed across the galaxy as nanny droids for busy politicians, space military personnel, and even smugglers who had children but too little time to spend with them. The TDL droid had a silvery surface with all corners and sharp edges smoothed for comfort. Because nannies and mothers were expected to need more than the usual set of hands, TDL nanny droids had four fully functional arms, all of which were covered with warm synthetic flesh, as was the torso, to provide a more nurturing experience for a baby held in robot arms. Anakin cooed with pleasure to see the droid, said a word resembling its name. Winter patted the baby on the back, saying good night.
"Do you have a preference from the large selection of lullabies and bedtime music I have available, Mistress Winter?" the droid said.
"Make a random selection," Winter answered. "I want to get back to the operations room. Something doesn't feel right tonight."
"Very well, Mistress Winter," the nanny droid said, cradling Anakin in her arms. "Wave good night." She plucked up Anakin's pudgy hand and puppeted a wave.
Winter made it to the door of the operations room just before the intruder alarms went off. She rushed into the control center, scanning the big screens that showed outside images of the stark landscape. Sonic booms thundered through the thin air as large objects streamed down in a tight cluster. Winter saw the last of a group of projectiles impact at the base of the nearest spire of rock. Winter activated the automated defense systems. She closed the massive shield doors that covered the entrance to the hangar grotto. Through the rocks, she could feel the heavy vibration as the metal doors slammed together. She saw movement below, just out of range of the cameras. Then a long metal leg bent up on a huge articulated joint. A foot spiked with claws smashed into the rock face, creating traction with explosive bolts. Then the huge machine levered itself out of view around an outcropping. Winter enhanced the audio pickup, listening to the groaning sounds of straining machinery, pulleys and grinding engines, the clank of treads. Working rapidly, she switched to another set of image enhancers mounted on a distant pinnacle. The picture that appeared made her gasp in amazement and fear, an extreme reaction considering her usual unemotional and inflectionless manner. The smoldering hulks of protective re-entry pods lay strewn about the landscape. The metal shells had cracked open like black vermin eggs and unleashed mechanical monstrosities, eight-legged arachnid-like machines. Each of the heavily jointed legs moved along different axes as the clawed feet helped the ellipsoid body scuttle over rugged terrain, finding footholds in the rock and scaling the sheer peak in which Winter and Anakin hid. Eight Imperial spider walkers swarmed up the stone pinnacle,
firing bright green blasts against the thick walls of the stronghold, searching for a way in. 13. The Jedi trainees gathered in the dusty, abandoned war room of the Great Temple. They had chosen it as the most fitting place to plan their battle against Exar Kun. On the third level of the ancient ziggurat, the war room had once been used by the Rebel Alliance as a control center for their secret base. Here, the tactical genius, General Yan Dodonna, had planned the strike against the first Death Star. Kilgall and the others had cleared away much of the debris that had collected in the decades since the rebels had left the base behind. Multicolored lights flickered on the control panels of the few functional sensor networks. Grime-caked viewing plates and cracked transparasteel screens made the signals refract and glitter. Atop a tactical map, the tiny hash-marked footprints of a skittering reptile were overlaid with the larger clawed prints of some predator that had chased after it. Sealed behind the protection of thick stone walls, the war room allowed no outside illumination. Newly restored glow panels in the corners made the place shine brightly, but also enhanced the shadows. Kilgall looked at the group of Jedi trainees, a dozen of the best, but now they were gripped with fear and indecision, unprepared for the trial forced upon them. Some, such as Karana Tai, Cam Solusar, and, surprisingly, Streen, reacted with outrage to the long-dead Lord of the Sith. Others, particularly Dorst 81, were filled with an unreasoning fear, afraid to challenge the dark power that had been sufficient to warp other students and defeat Master Skywalker. Kilgall herself did not look forward to the fight, but she vowed to do everything she could against their unwanted enemy. "What if Exar Kun can hear our plans?" Dorst 81 said, his large eyes shining in the harsh light. "Even here, he might be spying on us." His voice rose, and his yellow olive skin mottled with panic. "The Dark Man can be everywhere," Screen said, leaning across the cluttered table. His frizzy gray hair still looked windblown. He fidgeted as he glanced around the room, as if afraid someone were watching. "There's no other place we can go," Kilgall said. "If Exar Kun can find us here, he can find us wherever we go. We must operate on the assumption that we can still fight him." She gazed at the candidates. She had taken great pains to develop her oratory skills as ambassador for Calamari. She had used her voice and her wits to great success in the past, and now she took advantage of her gift. "We have enough real problems to confront. There's no need to manufacture worse ones from our imagination." The others murmured in agreement. "Tion," Kilgall said, "much of our plan depends on your knowledge of ancient Jedi lore. Tell us what you know about Exar Kun." Tion sat up in a battered and uncomfortable chair beside one of the dilapidated tactical stations. Across her lap lay the double-boxed musical instrument on which she played old ballads to anyone who would listen. Tion had only a small amount of Jedi potential. Master Skywalker had made that clear to her, but she would not be swayed from her resolve to become one of the new Jedi Knights. She had become enamored of Jedi legends, traveling from system to system, digging through ancient writings and folk tales, compiling tales of the Jedi from thousands of years before the dark times. The Jedi holocron had been a treasure trove, and Tion had spent much of her time studying it, replaying forgotten legends, clarifying details. But the holocron was destroyed when Master Skywalker had asked the simulated gatekeeper, the ancient Jedi Master Vodo Sias Bas, to tell of his student Exar Kun, who had rebuilt the Brotherhood of the Sith. Tion flicked molten silver hair over her shoulders and looked at the other trainees with her eerie mother-of-pearl eyes. Her lips were thin and pale, bloodless with tension. "It's very difficult to find verifiable legends from the Great Sith War. That was 4,000 years ago, and it was incredibly devastating. But apparently the old Jedi Knights were ashamed of how they had failed to protect the galaxy. Many of the records were distorted or destroyed, but I think I've pieced together enough." She swallowed, then continued. "Kun seems to have built his primary stronghold on this jungle moon. He enslaved the Masasi race to build all these temples as focal points for his power." She looked around, sizing up the Jedi trainees. "In fact,
This gathering reminds me of the great council on the planet Dennebah, when most of the old Jedi Knights met to discuss the dark tide rising through the galaxy. Master Volo Siask Bas, who had trained Exar Kun, became a martyr when he tried to turn his student back to the light side. When Master Volo did not succeed, the other Jedi banded together in a massive strike force such as had never before been gathered. Though Kun had enormous power, it seems that the key... Tion tapped the side of her instrument with a glistening fingernail. The key was that the other Jedi combined their might. They fought together as a unit, where all the pieces fit together as components in a much larger machine powered by the Force. I've found only sketchy information, but it seems that in the final battle, the unified Jedi wiped out most of the jungles on Yavin 4, laying waste to everything in their efforts to destroy Exar Kun. Kun drained dry the life force of all his Masasi slaves in one last gambit. The ancient Jedi succeeded in destroying much of what he had built and obliterated Kun's body, but he somehow managed to preserve his spirit within the temple for all these years. "Then we must finish the job," Tirana Tai said, standing up. She wore the reptilian body armor all the time now, unencumbered by a Jedi robe, because she did not know when she might need to fight at a moment's notice. "I agree," Cam Salusar said. His gaunt face held the expression of a man who had long ago forgotten how to smile. "But how?" Streen said. "Thousands of Jedi could not obliterate the Dark Man. We are only 12. "Yes," Tirana Tai said. "But this time, Exar Kun doesn't have a race of enslaved people to draw upon. He has no resources but himself. Besides, Kun has already been defeated once, and he knows it." "And," Kilgal interjected, gesturing around the table, "all of us have trained together from the beginning. Master Skywalker made us to be a team. Leia called us champions of the Force, and that is what we must be." Standing at the pinnacle of the great temple, Luke Skywalker's shimmering form could not feel the cool twilight breeze as the lumbering orange hulk of the gas giant cast fading light across the jungles. Luke watched a flock of bat-like creatures take to the air and swarm across the treetops in search of night insects. He remembered his nightmare when Exar Kun, disguised as Anakin Skywalker, had urged Luke to dabble in the dark side.